You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Tyler Pratt. Last week, we spoke at length with the inaugural winner of Cal Poly's Martin Luther King Legacy Award for her efforts in advocating for underrepresented students. Her name is Camille O'Brien. We discussed the programs that she's launched on campus to strengthen the campus community and the struggles many students face on campus. We kick off part two of our conversation today about her efforts to promote awareness of diversity and inclusion in her own classroom.
I teach a course called Sports and Gender. And it is looking at how gender, race, ethnicity influence the way we organize sports and can sometimes serve as barriers to opportunity to participate or not. When I first started teaching that class, it was almost all white men who would sign up for it because probably about sport in the title. I don't know. It was kind of interesting, right? And so there I am, and the first day we're talking about feminism and feminist theory and all the different ways in which feminism can, you know, be interpreted or viewed. And so, like, maybe it's day two or three, we go through an exercise in the class on intersectionality. And so the intersection of all the different identities that people have. And so even if it's a class almost all men, almost all white men, they begin to see that they have other parts of their identity, their religion, their sexual orientation, their, you know, where they grew up, if they speak another language at home, right? All these different types of parts of identity that may not be as visible. And we have a conversation about, you know, the privilege and opportunity and how, you know, sometimes parts of my identity give me privilege, access to things that you might not have the same privilege as I do, right? And so they're in small groups and they sort of get to play around with the idea of, like, what parts of their identity do they think that allow them privilege in their social worlds and what parts of their identity don't. And we don't have, like, necessary answers about that, but just in that awareness that there's more to them than being a white man, or there's more to me than being a black woman. And I think it helps them when I use myself as an example. I'm not afraid to talk about some of the negative experiences I've had when someone has called me the N-word. Now that I have my PhD, though, you know, I'm like, I know, PhD privilege. And so that's Dr. N. You know, I'll say, that's Dr. N, you know, if you're going to call me that, you know, get it right. Don't get it twisted. It's a way to sort of start a conversation, break down some misinterpretations. Of course, always grounding it in, you know, additional readings and resources. And it's not just anecdotal. I can show them, you know, data, research around the topics we bring up. And it gets us started, right? And it helps them become, it helps people understand how they can be allies, right? Because none of us move forward in this world without support. I can't think of anybody that has had any success where they haven't had someone or a group of people or a set of circumstances that have helped guide them along the way. I know that for myself for a fact. Having them to understand their identities and how they are either feelings, having points of privilege or not, I think helps and helps me also for my own points of privilege be better at being an ally to people.
A very visible push on campus over the past year since I've been here to really increase awareness of diversity and inclusion at Cal Poly. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
Definitely. When I think about the Cal Poly of, you know, when I left in 2003 and what I came back to in 2004, I mean, we have grown in leaps and bounds as an institution. Not just in wanting to be aware of and engage with diversity and inclusion because we should, you know, because that's what everybody else is doing. It's because it's a value that's at the core of the institution. At every level, wherever I turn, there is acknowledgement of the importance of recognizing that we fall short in creating a space and spaces on campus where all students, faculty, and staff have opportunities to succeed. And sometimes we fall short because of our own ignorance or, you know, there's things just are inherent in our policies. We're an institution that is built out of exclusion, right? We don't accept everybody that applies. So already we're sort of, by virtue of being the highly competitive, success-driven institution that we are, we set ourselves up for the challenge of helping people feel included, if that makes sense. It's just been neat to see, you know, from the admissions all the way through to the Alumni Association saying, you know, we need to acknowledge that we have problems with retaining and recruiting people of color onto our campus. And we have problems with graduating or seeing students be successful at similar rates. So there's a gap in how, there's a gender gap, actually. Men don't graduate at rates as high as women over 4 or 6 years, right? Students of color don't graduate at rates as high as white students, depending on how you want to pass the data out. So why is that, right? Is it, I don't think it's because they lack the ability. They wouldn't have gotten into Cal Poly if they lacked the ability. It's something about the climate, the institution, how we kind of go about our daily lives that reinforces any types of already existing individual or institutionalized forms of racism and sexism and, you know, classism, all those things. So I think we're doing better at least acknowledging that we have some problems and we're trying, I think, as an institution to collect data and educate ourselves around what it is that's getting in the way of people being successful. Oh, it's not just one thing, it's probably multiple things, right? We already talked about money, finances, but it's you know, just walking around campus and having people stare at you or ask you questions. I still get asked sometimes how the basketball team's doing. How's it going, coach? People just assume maybe I'm a coach. I used to coach, never basketball. But, you know, they don't know that I'm a professor. They'll see me and just maybe how I'm walking. I got my backpack on. You know, I'm fairly tall for a woman, and just make the assumption that I'm an athlete or a coach. So that fits the stereotype.
We've talked a lot about the student population there. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind taking a minute to talk about faculty at mm-hmm. Cal Poly, mm-hmm. do you feel faculty of color or queer faculty are adequately represented on the campus?
Nope. I don't, you know, do I feel that there's adequate or a reasonable representation of faculty, queer faculty and staff of color? No, I think it's, I don't know all the specific numbers off the top of my head. You know, I have seen an increase in the number of faculty of color in my college. That has come from very intentional advocating for diversifying our applicant pools, building on networks, you know, in terms of how we advertise. We don't just go to the Chronicle of Higher Education. You know, we make sure we're putting ads in a variety of publications. We make sure that, you know, people are carrying the information to professional associations. We're asking questions of our applicants where they can talk about their commitment to creating inclusive learning environments. So, you know, we're being very, very intentional in who we're able to get into the applicant pools. And then the interview process once folks come on campus, I think, has really improved. And part of that is a credit to the Office for Diversity and Inclusion and Human Resources. You know, they've created guides and provide training on implicit bias and the kind of things that can make it difficult to hire or look for people to hire who are different than you. We still think our biggest shortfall is in African-American faculty and staff. A few years ago, over a period of 18 months, we lost something like, you know, 8 out of 32 African-American faculty and staff in an 18-month period.
And your college?
No, just Cal Poly in general. I don't think there's any one reason why folks left. I mean, I think that probably a lot of some reasons why I left. It was hard to find my fit, sense of belonging, right? This chronic exposure to microaggressions is like death by 1,000 cuts. I think you might have heard that phrase before. You've seen maybe the video on YouTube with, you know, having the mosquito just sting you over and over and over again. And, you know, at some point you just explode, right? I'm like, I've had enough. It's not that it's too hard, it's just too exhausting. So I think that campus climate issues, lack of acceptance, and explicit, you know, statements of you're not welcome here. It comes in a variety of forms for people. Even though there was good efforts like with Beacon Mentor growing and the establishment of the Office for University Diversity and Inclusion, you know, a president, a provost, we have vice presidents, people that really, really want to engage and value diversity and inclusion, where the learning curve is so steep, the institution wasn't quite ready to meet the needs of the people that were here at that time. So, you know, now fast forward a few years, I think we're better now. People in leadership positions on campus are more aware of, are able to articulate, are able to model the type of inclusive environment that they aspire to, that we aspire to, that I aspire to. And it's not perfect, you know, we still have a lot of room for growth. And but I think it's nice when I sit in the role of an associate dean, and regardless of the student who crosses the threshold, that I can engage with them and meet them where they're at. I don't make any assumptions about who they are because of the color of their skin, but I am aware that there might be things that they're experiencing differently because of the color of their skin or their gender or their gender expression or gender identity or their sexual orientation. But I'll talk with them about that. And I think that sometimes the student's like, wow, you actually care about me, or you want to know a bit more about who I am and not just what my grades are. And that sets the stage for the conversation about what are your grades like and why they're like what they are.
I have to ask you, while you're here, this shift change in thinking about diversity and inclusion, do you think it goes all the way up the ladder of the administration at Cal Poly?
I think it does. I think it does go all the way up the ladder that, you know, the president and all the vice presidents and my interactions with them, you know, people are not afraid to ask tough questions. I don't think I'd want to be president of a university or a college right now. I can see it's hard to say and do things to please all people. But I think, and I'm not speaking specifically about any one person, I'm just thinking about presidents in higher education or chancellors in general, I think that they have to really surround themselves with a team of folks that can help them see their vision and their values through. I can see where it gets more and more challenging when you get beyond the walls of the institution and you're dealing with alumni, because I'm not an alum of Cal Poly, but I'm an alum of two different universities. And so as an alum, I know how hypercritical we can be of the folks on our college campuses and always wanting to say, well, you could do a better job, or why aren't you doing this? You know, why aren't you responding more quickly? You know, Cal Poly is a part of a large, you know, 23-campus public university system, and it's maybe not as nimble and able to respond as quickly as people want them to. But I think our president and our vice presidents are getting better at responding and acknowledging the hurts that are out there without fear of them somehow, some way devaluing what alums or other constituents external to the institution might feel is important. What counts is the people that are here now. And my Uncle John would say, if you're not here to serve the students, you're in the wrong place. And that's been a part of my philosophy ever since I started teaching in higher ed.
What would you say to incoming or prospective students and their parents thinking about Cal Poly or preparing to come next year?
Strap on your skates. This is going to be an adventure. Coming to Cal Poly, you really need to realize you're part of a community of people with a lot of different experiences and values and hopes and dreams. And, you know, we want everybody to be successful. But when you find yourself having trouble, these are the resources that exist on campus to help you, right? We're here to work with you. We're not here to give, I can't take your chemistry class for you. You don't want me to take your chemistry class for you. But I can help give you advice about when you start having trouble in the class, or whether it's with studying for exams or something that someone says to you. You know, here are the people you can talk to maybe figure out how to feel better about that or get past the hurts that might be impacting your experience.
What's next for you?
So what's next for me is to continue to engage with, you know, my colleagues in the college, colleagues around campus, faculty, staff, students. I'm co-advisor of a newly formed student club called Mustangs United, and this club was born out of the Love, Empathy, Respect campaign. When we talked with students about it during orientation, a couple of students are like, we love this, we want to do the same for students, how do we get going? So we have a newly chartered student club called Mustangs United, so I look forward to, you know, working with them and the other advisors and activities or programs to see how we can make everybody find their home, their fit at Cal Poly. And my days are pretty full. I do a lot of advising meetings.
Sounds like it. Just looking at your schedule and the things that you're doing, you stay very full.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And if I, you know, one thing in the wake of winning this award is it made me really reflect on how much I've benefited from not just Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement, because the civil rights movement is still ongoing. But all the people that had the similar hopes and dreams, right? My family members, my advisor, my own advisors, my mentors. And as people have interacted with me over social media these last few weeks, I have just become even more hopeful about all our efforts will pay off.
What are you hearing on social media?
That people are thankful that I've been a part of their life, that I've heard from former athletes, former students, cousins, you know, across the generations, and they said, you know, when they knew me back then, they could see that I cared, and it's nice to see the recognition now. And it's not just me being recognized, but me being able to fulfill the dream of so many other people. What I could do to facilitate someone else's success, that's the greatest gift that I think I can ever receive. You know, my hope and dream is to continue to be able to empower others to meet their hopes and dreams.
That was Camille O'Brien, an associate dean in the College of Science and Mathematics at Cal Poly, who's been with the university for over two decades and was the recent inaugural recipient of Cal Poly's Martin Luther King Legacy Award for her efforts in advocating for underrepresented students. You can hear the full interview on kcbx.org. You're listening to Issues and Ideas.